Hi friends, Adam Butler here with Pacific Takes and PackHoops.com. And today I had the chance to talk to Jeff Eisenberg. He's the editor over at The Dagger on YahooSports.com. And we had a chance to talk a little bit about the Pac-12, Arizona, some of the other favorites, as well as just how good Arizona State can be. So without further ado, here's my interview with Jeff. All right, well, Jeff, thanks for taking the time to answer a few questions about Pac-12 basketball. We write for Pacific Takes, which centers around the Pac-12. So that's mostly what we'll be talking about today. That cool?
Yeah, sure. That's perfect.
All right. So my first question for you is a simple one, I think, but is the Pac back?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's back to the 2007-08 levels where there was a pro on every team and where the league got 60% of its teams into the NCAA tournament, but I certainly think this is the best season for the Pac-12 or the Pac-10 since that point. I think that Arizona is a legitimate Final Four type contender, and I think behind them are a handful of teams who are capable of pushing them and capable of making the NCAA tournament and even doing some damage there. So it's certainly a long, long way from, the is it going to get one bid status that it was for a couple years there in 2010 and 2011. I don't know if it's at its ultimate peak, but it's definitely a lot closer to it than it's been.
Yeah, and one of the you mentioned in there that Arizona is a legitimate Final Four contender. My question to you would be, very, very good basketball team, balanced throughout. But what, if anything, makes them special as compared to, say, some of the other teams in that Final Four, that national Final Four conversation?
Well, that's a good question. To me, I think there's a couple things. One. I think what T.J. McConnell brings to them with a point guard who can get in the lane, can shoot a little bit, but more than anything else is just a terrific decision maker who can set up guys for shots where they look to score. I think it's something that sets this Arizona team apart from other teams and this Arizona team apart from past Arizona teams that have been good but maybe haven't been quite as good as this team. And then the other thing with their front court is just the size and athleticism that guys like Gordon and Ashley and particularly Tarzewski bring to the table. I don't think that's something that a lot of teams can match. I was there in person for their game against San Diego State, and to me, San Diego State is a team that with their length and athleticism is going to be a challenge for a lot of teams in the Mountain West and a lot of teams on the West Coast to match up with. And not only did Arizona match up with it, they trumped it in pretty much every area on the floor. They were longer and more athletic and stronger than a San Diego State team that is going to win a lot of games because of that that strength. So that really impressed me. And then also, I think Nick Johnson has been their best player so far this season. And, we've heard a lot about Aaron Gordon, and rightfully so. We've heard a lot about McConnell, and rightfully so. But Nick Johnson, in their biggest game so far this season, has made a lot of the biggest plays on both ends of the court against San Diego State in particular. He had a key charge in the second half and then six straight points that, really helped them keep San Diego State at bay. So I like his leadership, and I like the way that he's kind of progressed all 3 years that he's been in that program. So I know that's a long answer to your question, but there's a lot of things that I like about this Arizona team this year.
Yeah, they've been really fun to watch. And just one more question about those guys. They're lining up to play Duke Friday afternoon in Madison Square Garden. How do you see that shaking down, after you spoke so much about their size? And I know yesterday you wrote a little bit about how Duke might struggle on the glass. How do you see that matchup shaking out?
Well, I think what Duke has struggled most of all with is stopping dribble penetration. Their guards haven't been able to stop the ball, and then they don't have really a rim-protecting type big man inside that can clean up those mistakes. And I certainly think that that's something that Arizona can exploit. I think that you'll see McConnell be able to get into the paint off the dribble, and then maybe be able to find a big man for a lob, or be able to find someone spotted up behind the arc. So I think that that's an aspect of the matchup that favors Arizona. And then the other thing that I should have mentioned, is just how good defensively Arizona is, and Duke's greatest strength is how easily they've been able to score against other teams, and they've been able to kind of mitigate those defensive woes with how many points they've been able to put up, and how efficient they've been able to they've been able to do it. I think Arizona is as well equipped as anyone to be able to defend what Duke does. The one thing I do think you'll see Arizona do is I think you'll see them play small a little bit with Tarzewski on the bench, or with Ashley on the bench, in order to be able to match up with Duke's quickness a little bit better. But I think Arizona has the capability to do that, and I think they can win going small against Duke, and kind of counter those two forwards who have been able to take opposing big men off the dribble.
Yeah, and small is sort of a relative term, right? If you're running Rondae Hollis-Jefferson at the two, that's pretty big still.
Exactly, and I guess what I should say with that is Tarzewski, I think, is still a little bit susceptible to playing against a forward who can make him move and make him guard on the perimeter. So if Duke goes to that small lineup where they've had Jabari Parker as a de facto five even at times, I mean, that's not a matchup that Arizona is going to want to counter with Tarzewski. But if they're countering it with Gordon or with Ashley, I think that those guys are still quick enough to be able to guard one of those forwards playing the five position.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so changing direction a little bit, got a question for you. Do you like, dislike, endorse, loathe, condemn, or otherwise Andy Enfield's mouth right now?
I like it. I think that the biggest reason that Andy Enfield was hired at USC over some of the other candidates that they were considering was that Pat Hayden thinks that he is the guy who can make USC basketball relevant in Los Angeles. And, they've won on occasion at times, sporadically, a couple of good years with Tim Floyd, good year here and there with Henry Bibby. But by and large, that program has never been relevant. And I think that Enfield's way of doing that, first and foremost, of course, is to win. Secondly, is his style of play. But in a year where they're not talented enough to win in this Pac-12 this year, I mean, let's face it, that's a lower half of the league team that would probably be fortunate to finish anywhere better than, eighth or ninth. So one way that he can create some excitement around his program is by speaking confidently and by not being, afraid to talk about UCLA a little bit, or to talk about Tim Floyd and all that stuff that Enfield said. So in a year where they're not good enough to make headlines with their style of play, I think this is one way for him to generate some headlines and to create some excitement for the future of that program, when down the road I think they will be more competitive in the league.
So staying in LA and the other program down there that's won a lot of titles, and sort of stemming off the question I'd asked you about Arizona, what makes this UCLA team special? They've got some really good pieces, but there are a few guys that are seeming to fill into their roles maybe a little bit better than expected. Maybe tell me a little bit about Tony Parker, maybe Zach LaVine, anybody like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the guy who makes UCLA special right now is Jordan Adams. To me, he was their best player last year, and for almost the entire season last year, too. He came in with less hype than Shabazz Muhammad or than Kyle Anderson or Tony Parker, and yet his ability to score in multiple ways, whether it's getting to the rim, hitting a jump shot, or just kind of with that crafty mid-range game that he has, I think he's their best player now. I think he's been their best player the entire time he's been in the program, and I think he's pretty special. I think Kyle Anderson has really developed from year two to year one. He's more consistent with his jump shot. I think that Steve Alford has found a way to use that special passing ability and court vision that he has, with running a lot of the offense through him. And you've seen the results with a triple-double and a near triple-double in their last two games. In terms of the guys that you talked about, I think Tony Parker is getting better. You know, he lost weight over the off season. I'm still not sure that he's where they'd like him to be. He's still, you know, when they play man instead of zone, he still gets abused in those ball screens defensively quite a bit. And then I love the potential of Zach LaVine. You know, I don't know if he's there yet, but watching him in the open floor, there's a little bit of Russell Westbrook in his game. And, you know, again, I'm not saying he's going to get to that point, but out of all of their players, he probably has the most potential and the most athleticism on that roster.
Absolutely. So, going to shift up north a little ways to Oregon and Dana Altman's program. We're about halfway through the shoe suspensions. And it seems like the Ducks are doing pretty well. How do you see things forming with Dominic Artis and Ben Carter back into that lineup after Joe Young and Mike Mosier have already done some pretty great things up there?
Well, I think having Carter back, first of all, can only help them. And I think that was the more underrated of the two losses. I think, you know, people looked at Artis as being the bigger name, and I get that. He's certainly important to what they do. But they have other guards who can handle the ball, you know, and who have been able to run the offense, and they were deep at that position. So I certainly think Artis will help them. He gives them another ball handler, you know, another guy who can create off the dribble, another guy who can shoot a little bit. But they have other guys who can do that. So while Artis helps that, it's not as big of a hole to fill. With Carter, they're pretty thin in the front court, and the only true big man on that roster is Waverly Austin, who's a guy who you'd like to be more of a role player than a guy who's playing heavy minutes. So I think Carter gives them more front court depth. I think he's going to help them defensively. I think he's going to help them rebound, take a little bit of the load off of Mike Mosier. And ultimately, I just think that when those two guys get back, Oregon gets even deeper and even stronger.
Absolutely. So I'm going to take us over to the desert as I kind of walk us around the conference. But tonight, and really this week, one you could argue that this week is one of the bigger non-conference weeks in ASU basketball in quite a while. They got Marquette and Creighton. Is this going to be really telling as to how good this team is? I mean, I know they're good challenges, but what might we see from ASU this week?
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think this is sort of the litmus test for ASU and you know, how good is this team? Is it an NCAA tournament team this year? Is this the best team that Herb Sendek has had since the James Harden, Jeff Pendergraft year? I think that the UNLV win was a great win, especially coming on the road. But I also think we've seen UNLV struggle a little bit so far this year. So this week sort of gives us a good barometer of who ASU is going into conference play in a month or so. I think that obviously Jahi Carson is one of the best players in the conference and one of the best point guards in the country. I think he's getting scoring help from Jermaine Marshall. I think Jordan Pashinsky gives them a low post presence and obviously a rim protector and a rebounder on defense. To me, one of kind of the underrated keys for them is Jonathan Gillings. And his ability to space the floor and hit outside shots. If he can make teams pay for doubling off of him when Carson gets in the lane or when Marshall gets in the lane, I think that makes Arizona State really dangerous. It gives them another scorer, and it makes it harder for teams to defend them. So I think he's sort of an X factor for that team.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned Carson is one of the top point guards in the country. Do you think, or would you throw his name into the National Player of the Year conversation, or is that a little bit too big for him?
I'm not sure he's in the National Player of the Year conversation, although let's see what happens, you know, over the course of the next couple months. But I definitely think he's in the, you know, second and third team All-American type conversation. I don't think he's far off of that, I guess, is what I would say. I think he's in the top tier of point guards nationally. I wouldn't put him in the National Player of the Year conversation yet, but I think he has time to get there if he, you know, if he has that caliber of a season in the Pac-12 and he's able to lead Arizona State, you know, not just into NCAA tournament contention, but to a point where they're contending in the Pac-12. Then yeah, it's possible he can get there. But right now, I guess I would put him a half step below that as a guy who's in the Conference Player of the Year conversation and you know, it's certainly on the national radar, but still has a little bit more to prove than, you know, maybe some of the other top players in the country.
Yeah, he's certainly no slouch. Jeff, just two more questions for you. One, kind of a simple open-ended question, but what would you say is Stanford's identity? Is that a team that's just figuring itself night in, night out? What are they trying to do?
That's a great question. I have no idea what Stanford's identity is right now. I'll kind of speak generally about Stanford, and maybe this will answer your question. I thought last year that the Josh Eustis and Dwight Powell had a really nice season for them. I thought Powell progressed into one of the better players in the conference. I think Eustis's offensive game really blossomed to go along with that defense and rebounding that he had brought to the table previously. I thought where Stanford was really lacking was in the backcourt. Jason Randall, I thought, had a sophomore season that was somewhat of a step backwards from where he'd been as a freshman. He was really inefficient scoring the ball, and Aaron Bright really just didn't play particularly well for them. And so I think what's been really encouraging for Stanford so far this season is the play of Randall and the fact that he seems to be back to the level that he was as a freshman and then some. He really seems like he's able to take over games offensively from the guard position, which is great for them. What concerns me with Stanford is that in order to deal with the loss of Andy Brown, their small forward who is lost for the season and for his career with a torn ACL, what they've done is they've gone to a three big man lineup and moved Josh Eustis to the perimeter. And I'm not sure that that's a good move to get the most out of his skill set. I think he's better closer to the basket than he is on the perimeter. So it seems like that their identity is that they're trying to go big, and yet in the BYU game they were content to run and run and run and run with BYU, which was to me a really questionable strategy when you're a team playing three big men and you're facing a BYU team that plays three guards and is really comfortable in transition. So I'm not sure what Stanford's identity is right now. I think the talent is there for them to make the NCAA tournament and for them to be, you know, one of the better teams in the Pac-12, but I still think they're trying to get the pieces to fit together right. And, you know, they need to hurry up and do that because they need to win a couple of, or get a couple of quality wins in the non-conference season so they don't end up, you know, needing 12, 13 wins in conference play in order to get to the NCAA tournament.
Yeah. All right, so last question. Any bold predictions or anything we really need to keep our eye on as we you know, you mentioned we are about a month away from conference play. Any particular players or teams that you think could really make a splash in the next couple months?
Well, let's see. I think the one team that we haven't talked about that I think is worth keeping an eye on is Cal. And I think for whatever reason they've sort of flown under the radar nationally and even within the conference a little bit going into the season. And Mike Montgomery, since he's been at Cal, has finished fourth or higher in the conference every single year. They return four starters from last year's team, and the one who they have to replace obviously is a good one in Alan Crabb, but I think the freshman Jabari Bird is producing similarly to what Crabb did last year, or at least approaching it, and I think he's only going to get better as the course of the season goes along. So, I don't know if that answers your question fully, but I think Cal is a team that is worth watching both in Maui and over the course of their non-conference season, because I think they're a little better than people are giving them credit for, and I think they probably end up, you know, maybe not challenging Arizona, but in that group along with UCLA and Colorado and Oregon in that second tier in the conference where those are the teams that are pretty clearly in the NCAA tournament.
And that's the abrupt finish due to some editing issues, but I hope you enjoyed yourselves. And again, that's at Jeff Eisenberg. Give him a follow on Twitter or go read his stuff at the Dagger on yahoosports.com. I've been Adam Butler. Thanks for listening.